Refugee advocates say comments from the new Prime Minister and his Foreign Minister Bob Carr that a growing number of asylum seekers coming to Australia are not genuine refugees are disgraceful and factually incorrect. Senator Carr said last week Australia needs a tougher assessment regime for asylum seekers to stem what he says are the growing number of economic refugees coming to our shores and getting refugee status. The Foreign Minister says increasingly these are not people fleeing persecution, they're just paying people smugglers to get here. And last week the new Prime Minister, Kevin Rudd, added his voice to that concern.
Look, let's just face some facts here. A whole bunch of people who seek to come to this country are economic migrants who are seeking to comport themselves as refugees.
That was the Prime Minister speaking on Friday. Well, Julian Burnside is an eminent QC. He's a human rights activist. He joins us this morning from Melbourne. Julian Burnside, welcome to RN Breakfast.
Morning, Fran.
You heard the Prime Minister there saying more and more these people are not genuine refugees. Bob Carr has said that we're even getting whole boatloads of arrivals now claiming asylum who are economic migrants, not refugees. What's your response to that claim?
Well, first of all, I'd give Mr. Rudd the benefit of the doubt that he's simply passing on what Carr has said to him. Senator Carr started this, and in my view, there's nothing about what he said that should be accepted. First of all, he does not identify any case. He doesn't identify any facts on which he's acting. The reality is we all know that over the last 15 years, about 90% plus of boat people arriving in Australia have been assessed by independent decision makers as genuine refugees in Australia, using the United Nations test for what is a refugee. Now, is Senator Carr saying that the independent decision makers are doing their job badly?
He is. He's saying they haven't been hard-headed enough on the Refugee Review Tribunal.
Well, that's a disgraceful thing for any Minister of the Crown to say. You know, the point about independent decision makers is they're not supposed to be lent on by politicians to do their job differently. And I do wonder, how it is that Senator Carr can say that he knows the truth of the matter in a whole bunch of cases where the decision makers have actually got the facts in front of them?
Well, I think it's the facts that he's questioning. He's saying that that perhaps the information that the members of the Refugee Review Tribunals are placing their deliberations on are not actually hard-headed enough, and he's going to be asking Foreign Affairs and I guess the ambassadors and others in the places where these people are coming from to provide more up-to-date information on which to base these assessments from the source countries.
Well, it's not too difficult to get information about the source countries, and the Refugee Review Tribunal has been doing that for a very long time. My point is that Senator Carr, as a member of the government, should not be imposing pressure on independent decision makers, telling them to decide cases differently, especially when those independent decision makers know the facts of each case and Senator Carr doesn't know the facts of any of the cases.
Senator Carr is particularly singling out people arriving here on boats from Iran and from Sri Lanka. And he said the facts are that many of these people, he talked about the Iranians again this morning on AM, are middle-class Iranians who are fleeing Iran because the sanctions that have been put in place because of Iran's nuclear position is just making life too difficult for them.
Yes, I heard him say that. It's interesting that he works from the assumption that a person who's from the middle class of a society cannot be a refugee. He also said that they are members of the religious majority. I don't think that prevents you from being a refugee either, because the refugee status test includes that you're a member of, you're being persecuted because of religious beliefs, social beliefs, membership of a social group, political beliefs, and that's especially important in Iran. He also mentioned...
Yes, but he makes the point on that very front. He says it's unarguable, I'm quoting him here, that if someone is leaving a country and they're part of the majority religious and ethnic group, then they're not being persecuted in the way the Refugee Convention describes. Is that a fair enough claim?
No, that is fundamentally wrong, and it demonstrates how completely misguided his approach is.
Why is that wrong if they're from the majority?
Because to be a member of the majority religion does not mean that you can't be persecuted for other convention reasons, such as political beliefs, membership of a particular social group. Now, you know, we know how politically tight things are in Iran, And of course, most people in Iran are Muslims, although there are two branches of Islam which are pretty tough on each other, so that if you happen to be a member of the Shia majority, it may be that being a member of the Sunni minority in Iran also exposes you to danger. But many people fleeing Iran have been persecuted for political reasons, notwithstanding that they're Muslims.
What about the spike, a really significant spike in the number of people coming from Sri Lanka, and the government and some refugee advocates have conceded that there were a growing number of what could be described as economic migrants on those boats. In fact, the people smugglers were actively saying to them, there's work in Australia, Australia needs more workers, and these people were arriving and saying that. Now, the government had made a big show of the fact that they were sending most of these people, or a lot of them anyway, straight back. Has that had an impact? That policy, which a lot of refugee advocates are concerned about anyway, has that had an impact on the changing, the profile, if you like, of who is arriving here from Sri Lanka and the numbers in which they're coming?
I thought it was interesting that he also singled out Sri Lanka because, of course, most of the people arriving from Sri Lanka seeking asylum are not members of a majority. They're Tamils who are presently the subject of pretty harsh action after the end of the civil war in Sri Lanka. And I thought it was quite telling that Senator Carr ran the Iranians and the Sri Lankans together in his rather sweeping comments.
But you do accept that there were a growing number there for a moment of Sinhalese arriving?
Look, the composition of the groups does change, and we know the number of Sri Lankans have been sent straight back. And, of course, if they were not refugees, or rather, when they came, they did not put forward any proposition that suggested they were refugees, then sending them back seems a rational thing to do. But once they have been screened and once they have said things which suggest that they are claiming protection in Australia, then there is an independent decision-making process that needs to be put into play. And my fundamental objection to what Senator Carr said is that he's saying that he knows better than the decision makers who have the facts. Now, of course, there are times when people move on simply because they think they might get a better life somewhere else. Mm. The fact is that the people who get here by boat, we all know they have got here after an extraordinarily dangerous journey. They risk their lives to get here. Now, most people don't risk their lives just because they want a better job or a better house to live in. You know, I think there's no accident in the fact that more than 90% of boat people turn out to be genuine refugees. If you're prepared to risk your life to seek safety, you're probably fair dinkum about it.
Well, the Senator Carr has made it clear, and we did know that the Gillard government was already looking at tightening up this review process because of that figure, 90% of people arriving here assessed ultimately as genuine refugees. The government of the day, and this government again, felt that that was too high. Do tribunal judgments have patterns of approval or disapproval depending on the tribunal member that is hearing the case? I mean, is there a case to be made that some members of the tribunal are more pro or anti-refugee?
Yes, and my usual criticism of them is that a number of them have in the past seemed very anti-refugee. I mean, some of the decisions that some tribunal members have made really wouldn't, you know, they're very difficult to justify. I've never seen a pro-refugee bias amongst RRT members, and with the sort of political pressure that Senator Carr wants to impose on them, I doubt that we will ever see a pro-refugee bias. But what we want, at least, is the decisions to be made on the facts by people who look independently at the facts.
Julian Burnside, thank you very much for joining us on Breakfast.
Thanks, Ryan.
Julian Burnside, QC. It's 8:15 on Breakfast.